Welcome to I See What You Mean, a podcast about how people get on the same page and stay there, or don't, or perhaps shouldn't. Today my guest is Don Weber. Don's a longtime colleague and manager with many years' experience getting people on the same program and project management pages. Don, welcome to the show.
Hey, Lou, thanks a lot for the invite. Hopefully our discussion will open up some topics and more questions as we get into it.
I know it will. You and I have worked together for quite some time, but you've got a very interesting background. Give us a short bio on your education and work experience.
Education-wise, went to school in Virginia at George Mason University, undergraduate there. Graduate degree was at University of Southern Cal, and taught for a number of years in the local community college as well.
Your degrees were in what?
I have a bachelor's degree in decision sciences, and I specialize in decision support systems.
Yeah.
At the time, the master's degree was in systems management.
Yep.
Other certifications, I'm a certified project management professional, certified Scrum Master, and certified Scrum Product Manager. Some aspects about my career and so forth. One of the things I wanted to do when I was younger was work international. So, as I started my work, I started in the federal sector as a cooperative education student. From there, went into the private sector, which did a little more consulting back to the federal government. And then I worked for a small business. So I worked at a large business like McDonnell Douglas, worked in a small business. We had about six people in the company. Learned a lot about running a business at the small level. And then took a venture to work internationally. So working internationally, I went to work for a management consulting company. We had operations that's opened up in Asia. I went over to work in Asia, worked in Australia, India, throughout Europe as well. The primary projects I worked on, especially when I went over to Asia, were more greenfield type projects. The company or their clients had never done these before. And I would always volunteer, for something new, something innovative.
Yeah.
Something that would either, bring a new aspect of doing business or process improvement to these companies, or would actually sometimes it just be a cleanup. Okay, go in there and clean up. Mm-hmm.
And there's a story that we've talked about a large ERP implementation, an enterprise resource planning implementation you were doing that was pretty far reaching across organizations and I think countries, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So that's a very large change effort in any organization at an enterprise level. And there's a very interesting story in it about how somebody got on the same page who was throwing rocks at you. But you got them on the same page. How'd that go?
Yeah, this it was a large program. It was a multiple-year program, global ERP implementation. And this is for the company I worked for at the time. We had a number of companies. In total, we had about 26 companies that were in the company. But only 16 were active at the time. But each company had like its own HR system, its own financial accounting system. Mm-hmm. The companies were scattered across the globe, and we wanted to get everybody underneath one accounting mm-hmm. system, one HR system. So we kicked off that project. Did the HR aspects of it first, followed by the financial accounting, time and expense systems, and eventually, wrap things up with a resource management plan for this consulting company. But as you get into these programs, the thing that actually impacts them is speed, right, and the quality of delivery. Because the longer it takes to deliver stuff, of course, then you get more people say, hey, you don't know what you're doing, and why are you doing it this way versus that way? And when you're working across multiple companies, multiple countries, multiple languages, this cultural mm-hmm. Thing starts to snowball as you get in there. And so I had a number of people, and most of these individuals coming from the consulting side of the business. We're wondering, basic things they're impacted by our time and expense systems. So I had one mid-level consultant. His aspects on the company, what he was delivering, were time and expense systems with other packages, which were a lot smaller. But he was providing these to clients. He said, you know, putting these time and expense systems are pretty easy. You take them, set them up, put them in, you know, within a few weeks or a month or something like that, depending on the complexity of, you know, what's happening at the client site. Mm-hmm. And so he got very, you know, vocal about this. Not only, you know, emails, but send presentations and all that stuff, you know, pertaining to what's happening with the ERP. So
he looked at it as the piece that he knew, the time and expense reporting, was pretty straightforward, and he didn't understand what was taking so long with the broader implementation. Was that it?
Yeah. And you know, when you look at the companies we had, everybody had different holidays across the globe in different countries. Everybody had different ways of doing vacation time, etc. So one of the things we did in the accounting systems was, instead of saying you got, you know, leave for this, leave for this, leave for that, and so forth, we're just going to give one charge account for leave.
Yeah.
But depending on what country you're in, you get X amount of days off for holidays, X amount of days off for vacation, X amount of days off for sick leave, but it's this all roll into one charge account. Mm-hmm. That simplified a lot for the accounting team. But to do that took a lot of discussion, because each country had specific holidays.
Right.
Within certain countries, different regions had different holidays and stuff like that. So that took a while. That took several months to get that through. But it was actually had to go up to the C-level, you know, personnel to make decisions on this about how they want to run the company going forward.
This is interesting. Actually, I want to come back to it. But it's interesting because we're all involved in organizational change. Our listeners are involved in organizational change. And there's often a lot at stake that might have to do with things that are more personal or more significant or in some ways deeper, like job functions, right? Roles, responsibilities, job functions, reporting structure, who you report to, organizational structure. A lot of things can change that rattle people. And in this story, in this case, you were changing some things that were fairly administrative. But still, it wasn't easy. It was more complex than met the eye, and it requires behavior change on everybody's part. All these people who put something in the system or run the system at their country level or company level in the country. So even though it was administrative, it was still a big change effort, wasn't it? Being administrative didn't make it any easier.
Yeah, the big thing on things like this is constant communication about what's coming. The other thing was you needed someone, you know, in each of the companies and each of the countries that you're working for that interpret that communication. Because, for example, one of the languages we had deployed was in Japanese. So how you communicate and how it's interpreted could be somewhat different.
Sure.
Right? And then throughout Asia, Europe, and also, you know, into the Americas and so forth. And
it's fascinating.
But what? Yeah, I guess to me was anytime we had, you know, like a major rollout, we had it, you know, should we say, do kind of a roadshow to go out there to make sure people understood what was being communicated, but being down on the ground floor with them, having a, you know, discussion, all hands meeting,
right,
in specific countries, make sure they understood it. You have some Q&A and stuff like that. And what you find out a lot of times is that the water cooler discussion, you say, this is really what it means about this project with impact. And then when you get out there and start talking, they say, well, this is what we've been told. And I'm like, well, that didn't come from HQ, you know, so let's sit down and kind of understand what your misinterpretation is. And that's really what it took to turn people around to understand what was going on with this.
So go back to your story, because I sidetracked you a little bit, about the manager who was, or the consultant you said who was vocal about an opposition or objections, complaints, and he put some things in writing. And I think it got to the executives, didn't it?
Yeah. At this time I was reporting to the CFO, and then, you know, of course, you know, the CEO, and then sometimes board of directors would be involved in some of the meetings and discussions as well. So the CFO just told me, he said, fix it. Okay, just basic fix it. And I said, okay, So I had a couple of conversations with this consultant, and he said, here's what I'm going to do. I want you to be part of our team here. Since you have a lot of expertise on the time and expense side, you understand from a consulting standpoint what your issues that you're facing with the change in timesheet processing,
Right.
timesheet policies and procedures, same as expense. Let's bring your expertise into the fold here and help us out. So one of the key things we were having was is that each country we had to go and talk to the professional services staff about timekeeping. And of course, every company, as you're aware, has issues with timesheets being presented correctly and
Right.
on time and being reviewed. Okay. One of the things we were putting in place at the time is that timesheets, if there were issues, it's not up to the manager to change them. We would have to reject them and push them back to the employee
Yeah.
to change them from a control standpoint.
Yeah.
So he came in and sat through a number of meetings. And of course, some of these meetings get pretty heated with the professional services managers and so forth about the issues they're facing with timesheets, how we're going to improve it, what can you do to help us out. And so a lot of these were confrontational. And after he sat through these meetings, it was like, wow, I didn't know you had this much coming at you. All
Yeah.
right, so let me make a couple suggestions. Let me go ahead and discuss some things with these peers. And find out ways that we can actually simplify the work for them.
Yeah. So that was interesting. So to get him on the same page, you actually invited him onto it, right? You said, come on the team, join the team, sit in these meetings with me and work these issues through. I don't know him, you might know. I don't know what he thought that meant that he could do. I guess he probably thought if what he thought you were doing was a lot simpler than it was, he knew what to do. He was going to come on the team and show you how to do it. Speed, like you said, speed of implementation is big in these large scale changes, and he was going to show you how to make it go faster. And then he realized there was so much more going on than he saw, or than he he on his own page, Don, what did he see? He saw what the time and expense processes and policies were about, right? Which
Yeah.
is fairly bounded, right? It's fairly bounded. It's not a big space or a big terrain. He thought that that was pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah, most of the clients he worked for either never had a an automated time and reporting system, an expense system. He's putting these in. Also, a lot of them were not, should we say, in the professional services area. They were more for, people that are running, time and expense for their people in the field. Might be
Yeah.
more in sales, might be some engineers and stuff like that. But when you get in the professional consulting services, people are out there working with clients, making changes, so they're expecting what they're going to be provided. It's going to be very simple for them. And of course, they all want to roll up the sleeves and try to make things simple, not only for themselves, but for the company.
Sure.
So they're consulting back to us from an accounting standpoint. We just want to put out the time and accounting system. You want to put more controls
Sure.
in there to be able to manage it. And of course, we want quality timesheets coming back in and that are, should we say, timely and that they, hit the deadlines and so forth.
But the interesting thing is when you said that the meetings you invited him into, some of those got heated. There was the professional services folks. What were some of their concerns? What got the energy going around some of these, around this, that he sat in and saw for the first time? What was going on?
Couple things going on. When I was working in India at the time, so we would have managers that would have, I mean, they could have 30 or 40 timesheets they would have to approve because they
Yeah.
would have multiple teams on stuff. Where he was working, he might have a team of 3 to 5 people that are working across multiple clients and all stuff. So his concern was more about is the time being charged correctly?
Yeah.
Okay. And can I get them in timely? On the other side, the managers to say, I got 30 time cards I have to review.
Yeah.
Okay, so how much time I have to get these things in. And of course, a lot of times I'm just approving them and the hours may be incorrectly entered and all stuff. And I'll just make the changes as opposed to go back to the
Yeah.
employee.
Yeah.
So it's really the conversations about controls, like accounting controls on stuff, so we don't get audited. And so that's what they're concerned about. It's like, I got to get all this work done. And now you're asking me that I have to reject them, push them back to my staff. I have to follow up the staff. They have to fix their expense or timesheets. And then they have to come back to me again and I have to approve them. I'd rather just fix them. And so we had discussions like that. And, you know, and he got involved with them too, you know, saying like, well, sure. Have you considered doing this? Have you considered doing that?
Yeah.
And again, like I said, there were like, I don't know, it was a group of 3 to 5 of these managers that would come back and it was like, okay, let me just bite your head off and tell you how we should do it.
Yeah.
And so he was like coming out of a couple of meetings like, wow, that's pretty intense. I didn't expect that you were facing stuff like that. And these are my peers. I know these people, you know, because he originally was from India and then he moved to California and was working for a practice there. But he was like, I kind of grew up with these guys in the organization.
Yeah.
It was like, they don't care who I am, you know?
Yeah. It's fascinating. He got on the same page because, okay, so I think of a page we're on, our own page, as a vantage point on something, right? In this situation, it had to do with an ERP implementation. In this situation in particular, it had to do with, let's just say it was the time and expense reporting. So he had a point of view, he had a vantage point on that. And you got him in the meetings that broadened his vantage point on that. And at that point, he stopped throwing rocks, right? He stopped complaining about how long things were taking because he realized you had to get in these meetings. You said 16 active companies. So you had to do this over and over and over around the world. And this was just one piece, right? This might have just been the time and expense reporting of that module of a very broad ERP, right?
Yeah.
So he had a different understanding of why things were taking the length of time, the amount of time they were taking.
Yeah, and it's, you know, a lot of it's, you know, we have eventually worked through all this stuff. And what came down to this, we had to train a number of people in each of the countries and companies. And then we had to go out and do the roadshow for the new time and accounting and the expense reporting system.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a company by company, country by country rollout.
Yeah.
Then, but this, I would say of all the things we pushed out there, this is where we had the most Q&A. Okay. When we went out and did the discussions and the training and so forth. You know, so for an example, one of the countries we went to, they had, I forget how many holidays they had, like 20, 25 holidays or something like that. And a lot of these are embedded into their culture. And so we said, well, we're only going to give you X amount of holidays. So you need to choose which one of those are put into the holiday. The other one is you're going to have to use your personal time. Okay. You know, your vacation time or whatever you want to call it, PTO. And so that opened up a lot of discussion.
Yeah, I bet it did.
That's all related to timesheets, right?
Right. Right. Yeah, true. So I think of, I have a definition of getting on the same page, which I think we might have discussed. But before I say it, I may ask you, how do you think, what's your definition of getting people on the same page?
For me, I guess I've been fine. Think about what the delta is between where we're going, you know, either as an organization or as a team or something like that, and find out what the disconnect with someone else is or what their points of contention or, you know, why are they angry or why they think, hey, we should go a different direction or something like that. You know, just find out a little bit. And some of them might be based on experience. Some of them, you know, the experience could have been good, could have been bad. But find out what this difference is.
And so, yeah, you said delta difference. And if you, and so is your notion of getting on the same page, does it involve, would you say it involves alignment? So if you knew what the delta was and you could close that gap, are you looking for alignment? How would you describe what it means to then address that delta and close the gap?
Alignment, I think, is good. But I guess what I try to look at is what's the overall target, okay, that we're trying to achieve.
Uh-huh.
If we agree to the target, in other words, the end result of it, okay, and then we could work through whatever the minor things are. Okay, understand that there's a specific target as a team, project team, program team, or company that we're going for, and buy into the understanding of that. Sometimes the target that we're aiming for may not be clearly defined. So if it's not clearly defined, then it's up to us to kind of add more definition to it.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, you need different perspectives to add, you know, to build this definition, right?
So you get, if you get agreement clarity on the end, means some of the differences or some of the places, if people are on the same page about the end, where they might not be on the same page is about the means to the end, right? And that's what you're saying, you can negotiate or you can work through those issues. But if you don't have the end clear and people on the same page with it, it doesn't matter what you do with the means to the end.
The other thing I think is, if we come to that clear acceptance and definition of what the target is, then I think it's an easier way to define what the roles and responsibilities are for each person on the team to get there, and also what they bring,
Their
strengths, weaknesses. Okay, and that way that helps you align, because now everybody's marching in the same direction. Everybody's clearly defined what they bring to the team and what they're responsible for. And by doing that, I think that kind of takes away some of the difficulties that we have in moving forward. It's always been moving forward to get to the target. Sometimes you got to push, you got to pull, sometimes you got to carry people to get there.
Sometimes someone's got to maybe be let go, not from the company, but maybe off of a team. Yep. So I like that. The clear target means you can clarify roles and responsibilities. That's good. I think of getting on the same page as agreeing enough, and I use that word deliberately, agreeing enough to take the next step together. So in a process in which people are, as I said, they're not on the same page and they're trying to get there, they might be early in the process where it's proper to do some discovery and assess what's discovered. You could be at the other end of the spectrum. You're rolling something out. You're implementing something that's, you know, you've designed and you agree to. So you could always find in a process, in an overall process, many points at which people are agreeing on where they're at that moment, and they know what next step to take. I tried to find for myself a definition of getting on the same page that was very, very, very operational, highly operational, so I could make observations about it. At this point, do people even understand where they are? Or do they agree where they are at a point in the process? And are they agreeing enough at this point to take the next step? So I was also trying to get away from the idea that getting on the same page meant consensus or unanimity. It might. I'm not saying it never does, but it doesn't need to. And you can't always have that all throughout the whole process. You have to build it. And so I thought getting agreement enough right now to take the next step got people on the page at that time, plus building the capability to do that together, right? So yep. They're learning from each other how to have those conversations with each other. You've got people from different points of view, different roles, responsibilities, representing different aspects of a program or a project, and they're figuring out as a team how to bring those things together to each other to make sense of them together. So I can make sense of my piece of it, and I know Don can make sense of his piece of something. So part of one of the challenges is to learn how to have the conversations together about how to pool that individual knowledge into a group knowledge, right? And there's a little bit of a capability building in that that helps them through the process. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Another question. As you were talking, I was thinking of the word that transparency. So
yeah,
you know, a lot of times when you get these things to get the alignment, to get an agreement, sometimes you have to be somewhat transparent about some information that you need to share. Okay, you know, kind of bring this alignment together. In other cases, maybe not as much needs to be shared mm-hmm. about where we're going on stuff. You know, an interesting thing came about. When I was one of the projects of working in Asia, we did a lot of fixed price contracts. So on that, try to get people to think more innovative, be motivated, you know, to keep them going on stuff, to be more transparent. And so one of the things on the transparency is delegation. All right. So for example, instead of having like one project manager with a large team of, you know, 10 to 20 people or mm-hmm. something like that, you kind of break it down into sub teams, right? So you get team leads. And so you communicate downwards. you're very transparent on where we're going, what the targets are. The other thing is when you're working on fixed price contracts, the faster you get something done, the more money you put in your pocket, right? Mm-hmm. So innovation is kind of key in that. So being transparent and bringing innovation into the teams, make teams think differently, makes them work better as a sub-team or a larger team, things like that, because they can constantly think through things. Have we tried this? Have we thought about this? Whiteboard some things out, put it in place, and then delegating people to make decisions at a lower level in the team, okay, and bring the options up to, you know, whatever the leader is, the sub-team leader or the overall team leader, and have things presented downwards and upwards, but, you know, add more transparency and also more innovation in the team, make them work, think differently, and go faster. The faster they go, more profit into the for the project, and essentially it impacts the bonus pool as well, you know, for specific teams.
Well, so and here's what
that makes the team works differently, I think.
And here's what I heard in that, which is what you described to me sets up a different form or level of engagement. So if you broke a 20-person, let's say it's a project team, down into some sub-teams, then you're engaging three or four, let's say, of the members to be team leads, right? So they've got a different form of engagement that way. It gives them something more at stake, right?
Yep.
If I'm on that if I'm on a team, if there's three or four teams, let's say four or five teams of 20 people, I'm one of four or five on a team. Now the scale of the whole thing changes for me. Now it feels different to work with four or five people on a piece of the project, knowing that all the pieces are rolled up above that to the whole project. But now I feel like I have a different ability, a better ability to participate in effect or contribute to produce a result in something that's on a scale that I'm closer to. So pushing that delegation down, you were engaging people in a different way at the quote lower levels. I don't always like that higher lower metaphor, but it's we're stuck with it. So at the lower levels, they're engaged in a different way. I think that's, you know, there's a lot of research and all of our experience shows that that's typically effective at getting people motivated, contributing. How have you dealt with differences? So if you've got people engaged and they're, let's just say that there's a genuine opportunity for them to have conversation, they've got questions, concerns, objections, they might really think something should be done a certain way. And those differences, as you know, there could be good ideas for innovation. Out of those differences can come some creativity. But you can also get caught in the differences and end up in conflict. So we have this picture in our minds of sort of a rosy picture of good participation, and people are they've got their, you know, they're, everybody's got pulling their oars in the same direction, but it doesn't always work that way. What other ways have you used to help people overcome differences, convert their differences into maybe a more productive way forward as a group or a team?
I'll give you an example here. So, I was working down in Australia. I was on an assignment for a national discount grocery retail enterprise. My role in that engagement was I was in charge of all supply chain systems covering products coming from the farms and products coming from manufacturers to the store shelves. So I had everything from transportation, warehousing, all the way to the store shelves. And I just say one of the issues that we encounter on that was, you know, I had the legacy systems. I've also at the time, this is at the time Y2K was going on. So we had to start staffing up to get Y2K prepped for the legacy systems, which were developing COBOL. So I had an O&M shop, operations and maintenance shop. We had about 4 to 5 people at the time. And we had a new young team leader who was just hired. This guy knew COBOL inside and out. He knew how to fix things. One of the key things we were facing was that the legacy systems typically had some issues when they ran their overnight programs, And so whoever was assigned overnight duty typically had to roll up their sleeves and fix things and keep the systems running. As a team lead, a lot of times he got brought into this to help, some of his colleagues, or if he was in charge at night, he'd be working overnight as well. And this happened just way too much. And what we're finding out was there were a number of things the business wanted to do. And a lot of times the data going to the legacy systems wasn't done correctly based on data entry on stuff, and they were constantly fixing, errors and data, which, would either cause the systems to shut down or produce incorrect results than we were expecting that overnight. So he approached me one day and said, "Hey, our systems run 7 days a week. I'm probably up 4 or 5 nights a week working on these, and plus, I have to come into work the next day, put in a full day. I got a young family, and I had, I guess baby's about 2 or 3 years old, plus his wife was expecting." Again, he says, I can't do this anymore. And I just thought, we spent so much time to find the individual to bring in, and what we're finding out is, we're going to lose him. And so I said, "Well, instead of losing you, let's sit down and let's, if you want, either you and I can come together, or we bring in the rest of the team, and let's whiteboard out the issues that you're facing, T-chart, right? Okay, what are the issues you're facing? Okay, and then tell me ways you think you can improve things. And if they're outside of your control, bring it to me, and I'll raise it either to the people on the business side or raise it up to the CIO to try to get these things resolved. If you need another person, or if you need, what do you guys need? Okay, and let's sit down and let's work through that." So we had a couple sessions on that. And we came out of those sessions, and they felt pretty good because now they said, we kind of brainstormed all the things we need. So took the leader, sat down with the CIO, and said, he's aware of it too, because he would get phone calls, from people at business late at night or more stuff like that. And we sat down and said, "Here's everything we need to improve things." And a lot of this stuff was things are being want to be changed by the business, but they're not bringing us in so they know what the impact is. All right. And he said, that was spot on. So let's get you involved in our discussions with the business and find out the probably the best way to get this thing done for them that doesn't have a major impact to your personal life or professional life." All right. And so after bringing that in, they were engaged in starting the conversations or being part of the conversations about any major changes to legacy systems, or if they had to bring in new systems that would have to interface with legacy systems and stuff like that. And what we found out was their overnight hours that they were spending fixing things to keep going actually dropped down to almost nil, and that occasionally something would happen and they were, would get a phone call that, they have to fix something. Okay. But these guys, their quality of life went up and their professional life went up too, because now they were part of being up front in these engagements, understanding what the impacts would be. So it pretty much is risk management, the way they would look at stuff and educate the whole team on that. And I actually, empowered him to take the charge on leading this. After he came with me, we would have the discussions, and I said, "I think you're good to go. You can actually run these by yourself now. If you want all 10, I'll just be a person as an attendee, occasionally add some comments or some insight to what the conversation, where it's going, stuff like that. But you need to take the ownership of this because you own the team. You own your personal life, okay, that you want impacted by your professional life."
So this is good.
I was gonna say that just changed the whole of the team and how they thought, okay,
Yeah, I bet it
where
did.
in the past they weren't empowered to do that or didn't think they were empowered to do that. That was a key thing.
And it might not have been. So this is a situation in which the individuals were carrying the extra burden of the bad process, and you were about to lose one. And so you said to him, instead of you quitting, let's look at this and see if we can solve it. And then you and he and the team were able to make some process changes that improved their quality of life, their professional contributions, and I'm sure made improvements to the overall programming effort.
Yeah, really, the way I looked at it was a lot of these, a lot of the people on the team is like, you know, we've been doing this for years.
That's how we do it.
Right. And we're just off in this extra room over here. No one knows what we do, how much we do and stuff like that. But, you know, essentially we empower them, I guess, discuss,
yeah,
be innovative, and whatever your list of things that you require, let's bring it up to the CIO and let's ask for it. The CIO pretty much, I think he approved, you know, probably 90% of the, yeah, stuff they requested.
Yeah.
And the other stuff they would have to make, you know, a larger investment in and things like that. But they, sure, were just like, wow, we didn't know we could ask. I'm like, okay.
Well, and you know, I've blogged about a concept called organizational debt. Well, you know what technical debt, yeah, is. And I've blogged about organizational debt being a little bit of a broader concept. But really what you retired some technical and organizational debt. They retired some technical and organizational debt by the conversations that you said, let's have. Right? Because as they fixed things and made things better and moved things upstream in the process, you were getting rid of the decisions that were legacy decisions that resulted in them fixing stuff overnight in that condition. And you made improvements that retired technical debt in the system and retired organizational debt for everybody, including the business units. That's pretty cool.
I mean, the big thing is just seeing the smiles on their face and the stress and them getting sleep too.
Well, exactly. Because that's the thing about organizational debt is that people carry it. The organization, yeah, partially, at some point in time, the organization makes decisions, many of them over time, which only solve a problem part way or only take you so far down a path. And it's that delta, it's that difference between what needed to be done and what got done that individuals have to pick up and carry. And at some point, like these guys were carrying a pretty heavy load of organizational debt to the point where the guy's saying, I got to resign because I can't work a day job, work all night, and have any quality of life with my family. I think in terms of a few things, Don, when I'm looking at a situation, a trigger in the first story was the ERP system implementation, and particularly the time and accounting or time and expense piece of it. Changing that was a trigger. In the last story there, it was actually the trigger might have been the guy coming in saying, Don, I can't do this. I gotta find a different job. The triggers for him were the constant overnight, you know, fixing. And then there's a narrative that goes with the trigger. There's always ways people in the organization talk about what they're facing. And if you listen to it carefully, you find certain words and phrases, certain concepts that have certain meaning for them that reveals they're struggling with, that reveals what they're motivated by, and reveals what they're rewarded by. And then there's their behavior. It's what they do each day. This last situation you described reveals something, a great difference between narrative and behavior, where the narrative that I can imagine those guys were having was, we shouldn't have to do this. This shouldn't work this way. There's a better way that we could do this. But the behavior they were engaged in every day was fixing problems overnight. And you get that big delta between the way that people think things should be and the way they are. And it can cause a lot of stress. It can break an individual, it can break a team, it can cause things to be dysfunctional. And fixing that situation might be a matter of closing that gap between what people think could be done or should be done and the way they're doing it. Do you ever think about the narrative that you're hearing from people as a project manager, a program manager, as you enter a situation, as you dig deeper into a situation, you hear the narrative and you listen to what they're saying, words and phrases they use, the energy around those words or phrases, is it in opposition to something or in support of something? What's your use of the narrative as you're sizing up a situation?
I hear this a lot in my current work, and I've heard it probably throughout my career. So there are people, I guess, and I'll kind of put it into two buckets here, right? So one bucket, you got people been working in an organization a long time, 10 years, 15 years or something like that.
Right.
But they're embedded, right? And so that's just the way it's always been. Okay. And so I show up to work and I do my thing. Could it be better? Yeah. Okay. And I said, well, have you ever spoken up? You know, and I use, you know, the question, why not? You know, why haven't you asked these questions? Why do we have to do this? Why do we have to do that? It's more of a why type thing.
Right.
A lot of people don't want to, you know, rock the boat or something like that,
right,
with a conversation like that. But in order to change things, I think you have to ask that question. Why not? Have
right.
we tried this before? And if we haven't, why not? All right. And that's what I've found out is there are some people like, well, I'm not empowered to do this. It's like, I don't think it always has to do with empowerment. I think it's this really, can you, you know, meet with a manager, discuss things,
yeah,
find out there's ways to improve things, not only for the manager, but also for the next level up or a couple levels up in the organization.
Yeah.
Some of it has to deal with, you know, where they, again, about the target, where's this organization going? Do they really care about improvements or making things better for the staff? Are they concerned just on the target? Is the target clear to the overall team? And if it is clear, then it doesn't matter if you're the lowest person on the totem pole, because anything that you bring back that could be innovative to cut costs, to improve something, to cut time or something like that, would be accepted. Okay. Now, when you have an organization that kind of says we're open to this innovation, and then how do people actually bring this innovation up
forward, you know, right?
Or
right.
Get recognized for it. And sometimes it may just take someone to facilitate it. Okay. And that's understand things. So an example here would be, you know, an organization I worked for was they start projects and they continue to go on. They never end. So they go on for years and all stuff. And I was like, well, that's not good, right? So they said it takes forever to implement certain technologies and all stuff. And I said, well, what's kind of the holdback? Well, the holdback really is, you know, people accepting this. So we're having, you know, this month we're going to do 50. Next month we're going to do 50. Or they haven't broke this thing down. So we're just going to start a project. So they don't have, there's an overall target, but there's not smaller milestones or smaller targets.
Yeah.
What they have to do. And it's a lot easier, I think, if you have these milestones or targets, you accomplish this, bam, okay, great. Let's go to the next one. Bam, we got that one. Let's go to the next one. So you kind of break it down for them. So it's not this humongous project. It's actually smaller pieces that we need to focus on to get them done.
Mm-hmm.
When you get that, then you get this momentum going. And next you know, these milestones start going by like shuffling cards or something like that. I mean, they just happen so quick. And then people buy into that. And that's really kind of a project management philosophy.
Yeah, it is.
Philosophy that once you start seeing that, and they're like, well, why didn't we bring project management in earlier to this to help us actually identify, break this project, this overall effort down to smaller chunks, finish them.
Yeah.
And then we look behind us at where the road was that we passed. We hit all these milestones, and in front of us we can see what the end is, because now we got milestones in front of us. We know how to accomplish each milestone to get there, right?
Yeah, I like that. I know you, so I know I'm not surprised to hear you say these things, but I'm processing them myself in a different so you ask some questions to get some conversation started, the why and why not questions. You said something important. Is let's not wait for a memo or a meeting from the boss that says, hey, you guys are empowered. Let's just claim the power that we ought to have within the project, let's say. Right? You weren't doing anything you shouldn't do. You weren't going outside some boundaries. You're just saying, look, we've got some authority and responsibility within a project. If we can make recommendations for improvement, we should do it. There's a kind of self-empowerment, is I think what you were saying you were advocating for, right?
Yeah, I had a client many years ago. I never forget this. He said, you know, I'd rather have people on my team to go out and do stuff, and then I come back and slap their hand, okay, because I know whatever they're doing is not going to bring down the whole organization.
Yeah.
Right? And so I'd rather let them be innovative, okay, and manage, be empowered to do these things. They don't need to come to me and ask, I do this,
yeah.
Can I do that?
Yeah.
Because whatever, I mean, unless it's going to be millions of dollars or something like that. But he said, most of the things they can do are very small, simple things, but it makes, it all adds up to the end here. And so, you know, when I was talking earlier about bringing it down from a larger team down to smaller teams, these smaller teams have to be empowered to think innovative things work more effectively and efficiently in what they have to do, and maybe compete against other sub teams and all stuff and what they're doing. But I think at the end, it's the lessons learned that they present as individuals, as the sub teams, as the overall team to the organization. And when you start doing this, other people are going to say, like, what was different about your team? Why was innovation? It keeps people motivated and allows them to have a story to tell themselves, right, to their colleagues.
So something just came to mind. Let me ask you this question. I think that in the position you're in, program manager, project manager, team lead, says to a team, a group of people, let's solve a problem. That's pretty empowering. The idea of, and to me, the definition of a problem is there's a position you're in today, let's say condition or position A. There's a position or condition you want to be in B, and there's a gap between where you are and where you want to be. And it's important to close that gap, but it's not necessarily easy to do it. You're going to have to put some effort into figuring out how to close that, to get from A to B. So a problem doesn't connote anything negative to me. It's more descriptive of a condition. If you do some problem solving, if you come together to figure out how to close that gap to get from where we are now to where we want to be, you're asking people to bring their experience and knowledge, skill, mindset, training. You're asking them to bring what they know to bear on solving a problem. How have you facilitated the conversations to get people to bring those individual reference points and experience together to create a group knowledge that integrated their separate views?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. I guess when I think of, you know, if you're on the professional services side, you know, you focus on delivery, okay? If you're on the sales side, salespeople have, you know, are able to get the foot in the door, get the conversations going and stuff like that. But I think if you team with someone from the professional services to make this joint sales call, because when you go in, you're going to speak to managers, you may have to speak to the technicians on their side or engineers or what have you, decision makers.
Right.
What they're looking for really is, okay, if I buy this, what's the impact to the organization? And there's financial impacts, there's technical impacts, there's organizational people impacts and stuff like that. But what they want to know is, what was your lessons learned in doing this on another client or doing this internally to your organization if you brought this technology in? And of the sales calls I've gone in a lot of times is that the people on the other side is like, you know, let me tell you about my culture. Let me tell you about my organization. How is this going to be acceptable? What's the impacts I need to face? What are the risks? And a lot of times what I found out was, if you got a small group going in there, it's like, do you have a whiteboard? Okay, unless it's going to talk about this thing. Could be a T-chart, could be, you know, hey, you draw a couple of things, I'll draw a couple of things. Tell me about what all your issues are, and let's talk through each of those. So it becomes more of a, instead of a sales session, it becomes more of a problem-solving discussion with them.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that gets them engaged, and they may come back and say, that individual that came in to help me whiteboard this solution, I want that person to be part of the team, okay? Because he and I have connected at this point on how we're going to solve this, okay? We don't have it down to the level of detail, but I have the, you know, the buy-in that this person understands he can get down the level of detail. Whatever we encounter together, this will allow us to work together and resolve it. As opposed to he's resolving something coming to me, or I'm resolving something. Yeah, it's more of a joint team. And if you played sports or coached sports teams, or even if you're a referee, you can observe this. It's always about some problem solving on the field,
right?
On the court,
right?
Stuff like that. And, you know, you see players talk to each other. Sometimes they yell, sometimes they push up, whatever. But they're doing something that's the buy-in, because you know, they have an overall target. The target is the win. Okay, for their team, okay,
yeah.
Or do something individually, you know, to help the team, stuff like that. But I think you get the same engagement when you're working with future clients or current clients, that you have to have this facilitation or this engagement that you come to a meeting of minds, you understand what the target is and where you're going. And also, it's kind of like there's this gap between the two companies, and you don't know about what you're getting into until you, you know, sign a contract. And that could be like a, always say anytime you sign a contract, it's like a marital arrangement, right? Because you have certain things, responsibilities on each side. A lot of times you're just kind of guessing at it until you actually find out, oh, we got this issue. Now we got to really work it through and discuss it. And then you find what the differences are.
You mentioned T-chart a couple of times. And so is that, say what that is. And it sounds like something you like to use. Tell me about it.
The T-chart could be pretty simple. I mean, you know, one side you say, you know, here are the problems. And the other side you say, here's potential solutions to work through it. You know, other times it may be, you know, here are the pluses and minus about something that we plan to make a decision on. Okay. It could be risk on one side, mitigations on another. Mm-hmm. So you kind of break it down. And to me, this is what allows everybody to have a discussion about it. You can facilitate this.
Right.
And visually you see it as opposed to, I think it's this or I think it's that. Basic T-chart is probably one of the simple techniques to use, right?
Two things you said, I think were spot on. One, it facilitates, it promotes it. It encourages conversation, right? Because people
it's visual.
People could talk past each other, not meaning to. Each person could be voicing a legitimate concern or a little bit legitimate question or issue about something that the team's doing. But in that unstructured setting, you lose good information and you mostly just frustrate people in the conversation because it doesn't seem to get much. The conversation doesn't go anywhere. The T-chart structures the conversation some, like you said. The T comes from the shape of it, right? Like it's just a topic at the top and a split down the middle. On left and right, you might have, like you said, risks and mitigations, problem solutions, pros and cons. So you start to structure the conversation by that visual, you know, by that layout. And then, like you said, it gets written down. So it's no longer just words in the air, but you're capturing things. And the act of writing those things down facilitates clarification because somebody can say, wait, that's not what I thought that meant, or that's not what I meant when I said that, right? So you can clarify and further elaborate meanings that people have, the differences of which could be important. If those differences are lost on the group and you're proceeding toward implementation, those differences could rear up and cause a problem. You're gonna hit a wall eventually. You're gonna have to clean it up eventually, and it might be at a costly point in the project. Writing it down, like a lot of things that we've talked about in our discussion, you're pushing clarity upstream. You're getting things clearer sooner rather than later, and that's just better for implementation.
Well, it leads to an agreement, right? So I mean, if you teach T-chart something, everybody has an input in there, hopefully, right?
Right, right.
And you get a visual. It's an agreement, and it's clear because it's now been documented. So if we have a specific target we're going after, we have this T-chart. And a lot of times what I've done is, you know, when you get certain things, especially if you're working a flip chart or a whiteboard or something like that.
Right.
So when you get these things done, you can actually take that and put it into the team meeting area.
Right.
So if you ever come back, as you're aware, you get meetings, you talk about it, you come to an agreement. 5 or 6 weeks later, it comes up again. What did we talk about previously? Well, let's go back over to the chart, okay? And let's talk about it and see if our perspective has changed now, you know, based on the last 3 to 4 or 5 weeks we've been working.
Yeah.
Are we still in agreement to what we discussed, you know, several weeks back? All right.
Yeah. So that's
why I think it's kind of a bonus thing there. That's, you know, because everybody can always look at that again. Because, you know, you wake up, you know, Monday, go to work. It's like, what did we agree to? Let me go
right.
back.
Right, right. So. Well, and there should be learning that occurs over time as you continue discovery of issues, as you continue sizing them up, assess or appraise them, as you apply what you're learning to decisions, to actions. You should learn more. The ability to go back and look at it and say, you know, when we first did this process, we thought these things meant certain things. Now that we're further along, do we have a better understanding of them? To me, that's one critical thing to do to get people on the same page. Don, thank you for joining the podcast.
Yeah, appreciate it. If you want to do another one in the future, I'm open to help you out on anything. Just let me know.
Thank you. I think it was a good conversation. We covered a lot of aspects of getting on the same page. And you know, your international experience and the scale at which you've done some of these projects involving multiple companies, multiple countries, different cultures, were interesting and insightful. So thank you.
Okay, appreciate it.
And that's how we see it, my friends. I want to thank Don for recording today's episode. You can find it on Castos, where I host my show, plus the places you usually listen to podcasts. Send questions and suggestions through the app. Subscribe and give me a 5-star rating unless you can't, in which case, tell me why. And join me next week when we take another look at how to get on the same page and stay there, unless you shouldn't.